Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
It is my destiny, it is the truth I seek. In this world I'll find a way to cross the line. Everybody's doing what everybody's doing, everybody's doing the same thing. I'll be doing what I'll be doing, I'll be doing my thing.
ESSR, cross the line. Welcome everybody to another feature show here on the Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat podcast and network. I am your host today, Scott McLeod, and to peek behind the curtain, we're recording this the morning of TNA, Hard to Kill. TNA is back, and so we, much like TNA have been doing the last couple of weeks, are looking back at the very best of TNA, because we could be here all week talking about some of the worst moments in TNA history, but there's a lot of good there as well, so let's focus on that. As I said, as one of the people who actually watches TNA regularly on this panel, I'm the one hosting this. Of course, it was in my contract. But joining me today is, first off, a man who you can't see it now, but he is paying tribute to his favourite TNA match of all time, Jerry Maraska versus Sharmell at Victory Road. It's Chris Murray.
Yes, seconds before we started recording, I googled TNA worst moments, and the third image result was Christy Hemme just sitting on Jenna Maraska's face. So to see the picture, go on our Spotify and listen to this show, and the picture will magically appear once you listen to 97% of it. Let's say that.
Yes, the slot served around the world. Very Inoki-esque in that match. Next up is a man who has monopolised the Scottish wrestling journalism scene the same way that Jeff Jarrett monopolised the NWA title scene in the mid-2000s. He is Billy Strachan.
Ha ha! Ain't I great? I'm buzzing for this. I've ordered Hard to Kill. I am back on the TNA bandwagon. Let's do this. TNA! TNA! TNA!
I did consider getting everyone to chant TNA as we started the show right before I went into my introductions, but trying to get people in unison over Skype never works out on this show. And finally, a man who's been helping reorganize these feature shows, the man who's suddenly become the Dixie Carter of the ASSR feature show, the GOAT himself, David Campbell.
As a close personal friend of Dixie Carter, I have a photo of me holding the TNA tag team titles alongside Dixie. It's great. Chris's picture is appropriate because there's also four tits in this panel today. I'm here. I have a cheese toastie. I'm pounding Coke. It's Coca-Cola. I'm not the Tony Khan of ESSR as well as Dixie. Let's do this.
There's four tits on this panel and two of them belong to David Campbell. Anyway, we're starting off. Everyone's going to pick their best male competitor. Everyone's taking a vote here. And then at the end of that, we'll vote on everyone else's, but you can't vote for your own. And then after another further discussion about female picks, we'll vote again and we'll get some listener feedback. We're going to go in specific order how we picked it in our group chat. So we're starting off with Billy Strachan's pick for best male competitor. Billy, I'll give you a couple minutes to tell us about your pick, why you chose them, and then anyone else can give comment if they feel so inclined. So Billy, your pick, please.
Well, I jumped in first as soon as the picks were open with my one, because I thought he's the greatest wrestler, possibly a complete package of all time. And that is the man, the myth, the legend, the meme. It's Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle came to TNA on a wave of rumors and allegedly of steroid use, but he came to TNA in 2006 and he went straight into Samoa Joe. That was the dream match. He picked off dream matches. We had the main event Mafia. We had Perk Angle, of course, with his amazing matches with Abyss. I mean, outside of hardcore matches, Abyss having good matches was kind of on the, you know, it didn't happen often. You had to throw in some hardcore element there, but you know, even Kurt Angle was able to get Abyss to not 5-star match, according to Dave Meltzer, because Big Dave's a dick. We're moving on for other things he did. Main Event Mafia, I mentioned that. He won all the gold, of course, defeated Samoa Joe, who was TNA, the first ever TNA champion. This guy has got TNA running through his veins, along with other narcotics. He is the greatest of all time. And we threw this word around quite loosely nowadays with the whole GOAT thing. I'm not mentioning anyone on this panel specifically, but he is really proven to be the best. And he had an absolute banger of a career. And towards the end, yeah, he was a little bit broken. It was a little bit hard to watch at times. But for those glorious years that we got the Main Event Mafia, we got former TNA X Division champion, of course, when he faced Jay Lethal. He's got such a plethora of accomplishments and accolades and matches that you can go back to any time. And I'll be surprised anyone could form a great argument to confirm why Kurt Angle shouldn't be voted the greatest TNA wrestler of all time. There you go. Boom.
Well, you make some strong words there from a mildly strong man, Billy Strachan. But yeah, Kurt Angle, you can't really talk about some of the best years of TNA without Kurt Angle. I think you can probably pinpoint the announcement that Kurt Angle's coming into TNA as a real turning point for TNA, not the TNA pay-per-view, but an actual shift in eyes getting on the product. A lot more mainstream guys who may not have heard of TNA at that point turning to TNA. And yeah, some of the matches he had in towards the end of the 2000s when he was on his, like, having his issues with injuries and substance abuse and everything. While it's also horrible that he was going through that, when you know he's going through that and then you watch the match he was having, you don't really see the physical signs that he's going through that. He's just running on pure adrenaline. You know, that's what the three eyes can do for you with Kurt Angle. Chris, David, do you guys have any comments on Billy's pick?
Yeah, I mean, who better to start us off than the guy who effectively just took TNA from this, like, kind of good, essentially regional company to the number two player in the game. And, you know, like, looking back, the number two player in the wrestling game in the US is a massive, massive deal. They, by, you know, 2006 when he got there, they'd essentially filled the void that had been left by WCW dying 5 years prior. I mean, it's really, really tough to pick against this for anyone else. I mean, Angle was the first wrestler to win the Grand Slam in TNA and WWE, I think. Came in, just took the company by storm so quickly. Who better for him to work with straight off than Samoa Joe? Loved that run. And then, like, the thing was, obviously they did the thing where Angle won all the belts and that was that. But, like, where do you go after you literally put everything on Kurt Angle? They actually managed to keep him, you know, in the limelight for a considerable period of time after that, with stuff like the Main Event Mafia, Immortal, Main Event Mafia again. And even, like, in his final few years, he was still having decent matches with people like Lashley. And I think he was doing stuff with Drew Galloway at the time and stuff as well. So, yeah, like, one of my friends who watches wrestling a lot, but he's one of the few people that I know that watches wrestling, doesn't do a podcast on it. We were talking about, like, controversial wrestling takes recently, and he was like, Kurt Angle had a better wrestling career in TNA than he did in WWE. And I was like, that's not even controversial. That's just a straight up fact. Like, he had a great run in WWE, but if you want to see the best of his wrestling and you want to see the best of his career, go watch the 10 years he spent in TNA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have to agree with Chris, exactly what he's just said there. I think the argument can be made in WWE that was character Angle. You know, we got a lot of range in terms of his character work. In TNA, the in-ring work is undisputed. I can't add much to what the guys have said other than just gush myself about how good Angle was in the ring. I do remember later on in his career, his feud with McGuinness, or Desmond Wolfe, as he was known at the time. And again, it just showed the longevity of Angle in TNA. just to echo what the guys have said, we probably wouldn't be doing this podcast right now if it wasn't for Kurt Angle joining TNA. But the importance of that moment of him joining was justified by the years you got after that of great matches and great moments. And hopefully, you know, I can convince you that my pick's better, but it's a very, very strong start here from Billy.
Absolutely. I almost forgot about the Desmond Will feud. That one of the last good things McGuinness got to do before he was forced to retire. Now, I say Billy was first in terms of picks. He got in there just before Chris, like a slight second before Chris selected his pick in the chat. An equally fitting pick, somebody coming in and helped rise to the company. Somebody who, weirdly, Chris thinks made a career of going to the alternative to WWE when you look at his career trajectory, and somebody who's very much being talked about still today. Let's talk about your pick.
Yeah, I in our chat, we do a kind of draft. As Billy said, he got in there first. Now, I picked someone, and then I actually traded my pick for someone else because I couldn't believe that someone else hadn't taken him. I was like, right, I'll be the fall guy here. I'll take Stinger. Because, for me, as a young kid, that was TNA was my first main real exposure to watching Sting. But after I saw the rest of the picks, I was like, no, we can't do this show without talking about this guy. So my pick, I had to go for AJ Styles. I wanted to find them for this show, but I couldn't find them. But I've got the PI AJ Styles gloves somewhere. Someone got me them for my birthday 1 year. They're incredibly impractical. They're just not comfy, and they're attached the bit between the thumb and the index finger. Just terrible, terrible gloves, AJ Styles. But great for wrestling, I suppose. But yes, so let me take you back to almost 20 years ago. I have the wrestling channel to thank for watching TNA. I think a lot of people do. The year was 2004. When I first came across it, I looked this up last night. It was NWA TNA weekly pay-per-view number 86. It aired on the 17th of March, 2004. It was the first ever episode I watched just shy of 20 years ago. The main event was an NWA title match with Jeff Jarrett defending against Chris Harris. If we ever get to our Chris Harris appreciation show, I'll tell you more about that match. But the sub-main event was a ladder match for an NWA title shot between Abyss and AJ Styles. Now, AJ didn't even win this match. He got beat by Abyss. But I just remember this being such a perfect introduction to him. It was like the perfect battle of, you know, big man with strength versus small man with technical ability. And it showcased the best of AJ Styles in such a short space of time. From then, I started watching TNA almost on a weekly basis. I tried to watch all the companies that were on the wrestling channel at the time, but then they all kind of fell away. Like there was NWA Wildside and FWA and the UK. But this one really gripped me because of the strength of the wrestlers it had. Now, TNA had moved out of that first venue in Tennessee that they used that looked like a barn, into that second venue that they used in Tennessee that looked like a barn. It was the last one before they moved to the Impact Zone. And AJ Styles was just always the man that you could lean on at the time to hold up, you know, the cornerstones of TNA. If it was, you know, Sting's Squadron and those matches against like the Kings of Wrestling and stuff like that with Jeff Jarrett, that was all great. He went on to when they launched on Spike, was it? With Impact, they went on to put him as like the cornerstone of the X division because, you know, they needed these big names that they had in the company at the time, like Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy, to prop up the actual title scene. But they had this reliable wrestler that they could, you know, rely on to support the X division scene. And then just over, 10 years, I just loved everything he did. Constant character reintervention. Reinvention. Yeah. With stuff like him working with Ric Flair to become this kind of like nature boy AJ Styles character. He had his hilarious sort of Kurt Angle-esque, I'm funny, I'm goofy, but I'm a really good technical wrestler run as well, tagging with Tomko to get the tag titles and stuff like that. And I just thought, like, if you're talking TNA, it has to be AJ Styles. We are so lucky, right? And I'll be the only person in history to say this. We are so lucky that Rob Feinstein got done for Diddlin, because if he hadn't, then AJ would have still been in the early to mid 2000s, he probably would have still been splitting his time between TNA and Ring of Honor. When this happened with Rob, they cut all their ties with Ring of Honor and AJ became a TNA wrestler full time. And that's when they sort of, you know, handed him the reins and he ran with it. He was just the man to defend TNA at all times, even to the very last match with his unification title match against Magnus. And I will leave you with two. Well, one's a quote and one's just a liner that I've reworded. Kurt Angle said, "Shawn Michaels is up there, but AJ Styles, wow. Every time I'm in the ring with him, it's like having a night off. He's the most gifted wrestler I've ever been in the ring with." And Will Ospreay as well said that he was inspired to be a wrestler by AJ Styles' match with Samoa Joe and Chris Daniels at Unbreakable, when he did the same as me, found TNA on the Wrestling Channel. So yeah, my pick, AJ Styles.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Well, of course, you can't talk about TNA. We were discussing in the chat, would we be crucified online if we didn't mention AJ Styles? And it's ironic that AJ was part of the, for a long time, the only TNA five-star match up until the most recent Bound for Glory. Well, where ironically, Will Ospreay, alongside Mike Bailey, got the next five-star match in the AJ. I mean, I think David, Billy, I mean, I think Chris put it where it's like, you can't really talk about the best of TNA without AJ. What else has there not been said about AJ? I mean, for a while, I think some people thought, him and Samoa Joe stayed in TNA for too long until they managed to, we now know they got success elsewhere, but they were two of the guys I think stayed the most dedicated even through the bad times of TNA.
Yeah, I, the one thing Chris didn't mention, banger of an entrance suit as well, you know, any time that can't go under saying that song still hypes me up. And Chris is right. I think in terms of homegrown stars, in terms of homegrown talent, you need to point to AJ Styles. You need to talk about AJ Styles. Like you said, I can't go on any more than Chris already has about the match quality. AJ Styles' in-ring work has been there since his debut. Like, and his style has evolved over the years. But I remember at the time, like, a lot of my friends were liking wrestling, but not a lot of them watched TNA. But even the ones who didn't watch it habitually knew who AJ Styles was or would seek out something from AJ Styles because he was that exciting. And when you're a younger guy and you see someone doing all the crazy flippy shit, for lack of a better term, that AJ Styles is doing, that's going to excite you. I think we're passing on to Billy. The one reason I think that for this format of show, people might not have picked Styles, and we'll talk about this in a bit, some of the booking decisions hindered him throughout his time. I think that's natural when you're with a company for 10 years that there's going to be some good, there's going to be some bad in terms of the stories that he was given. But throughout that, AJ Styles, even with that, took what he was given and made it the best that it possibly could be. He's a consummate professional, brilliant performer. And when you name TNA, one of the first things that comes to your mind is AJ Styles.
I absolutely, yeah. I was about to say that, but you took the words out of my mouth at the end there about him always putting in 100% effort with whatever he was given, whether it was Clear Lynch, whether it was it was that massive earring when he was with Ric Flair, whether it was marrying Karen Jarrett, Karen Angle at the time, but Karen Jarrett in the future, whether it was all that, he just made it watchable somehow. And I'm still including Claire Lynch in that. He was the guy, like, Kurt Angle would be the guy that would bring you into the show. You go, oh my God, Kurt Angle's on the show. I need to go watch TNA. You watch TNA, then you see AJ Styles, and you go, oh, I'm going to stay watching TNA because I need to see what AJ Styles does. I need to see what he does. This match with Petey Williams is amazing. He brought everyone up to his level, whether it was X Division, Tag Team, World Champion. He was just incredible. He was phenomenal. So to say, so people say anyway. And like I say, banger of entrance tune. I still remember his advert on the Wrestling Channel as well. He was one of the few wrestlers that had a wee little 30-second advert along with Jushin Liger and Colt Cabana, Team Shag. Oh, the days, the halcyon days. But yeah, like I said, I picked Kurt Angle because I think he was the guy that really brought eyes to TNA, but I can't argue that AJ Styles was one of the guys that kept people watching TNA.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you talk about his interesting lane. His phenomenal theme is maybe second, you know, other than that brief time he had Evil Ways as his theme song. Oh, what a tune. But when he was broody emo AJ Styles, which he seems to have brought back recently. And yeah, I think he fell into a camp where I've heard people comment, like Bischoff, whenever he talks about his time in TNA, briefly mentioned it, where I think he fell in that thing of people who were booking at the time looked like, well, yeah, you're a great wrestler, but I don't think they ever thought he was great in a character set, so they kept him to try and force him into different bits, like the comedy thing or being the next Ric Flair and things like that. Like, hell, Ric Flair is only his second most questionable manager in early NWA TNA. They had Vince Russo as his mouthpiece for a bit. Whoever thought that was a good decision was probably Vince Russo. But
it's mad to think, because, like, you know, for his second WWE title run, he still didn't really have a gimmick. It was just like, I'm just going to win the belt and be a good wrestler. And he held it for the eighth longest WWE title reign that's ever happened. So I guess just being a good wrestler sometimes works. And then he lost it to another guy who I've heard is a good wrestler. So, yeah.
No, his gimmick then was, I'm going to have feuds that go too long against guys I had better matches with elsewhere. And that was his gimmick during his WWE title reign. But we'll move on to my pick. And you know, again, some coming over at TNA, crossing the line. One of the first major people to cross the line, I think, in my opinion. I mean, he came over in 2005. Yeah, by that point, you'd had the Dudleys and Rhino. But this is one of the first big names, in my opinion, to come over. He's everybody's father figure. He's the instant classic, the leader of the Christian Coalition. Christian Cage is my pick because I forgot he'd actually been across two eras of the company after I picked him, because he comes in 2005 after his contract expires. He said, I didn't come here because I didn't have anywhere else to go or because I got fired. He basically got sick of being pigeonholed in a spot. You know, the WWE always saw Edge as the star over him. So he came to TNA and showed what a lot of people thought, that Christian, if given the opportunity, could be a main eventer on his own. And he comes in, initially he rejects Team Canada's offer, you know, led by Scott D'Amore, who's now running the company, to join them. So he's going to be a face. A few months later, against all odds, he defeats Jeff Jarrett for the NWA title, and plus 50 face points for dethroning Jeff Jarrett. He goes on this run, he has a great feud with Abyss, which led to a very bloody match at that year's Sacrifice, I recommend you check out. Then later in the year, after losing the title, he turns heel by assisting Jeff Jarrett, minus 50 points, with a really solid like swerve where he takes the guitar off of Jarrett and lets Sting, you know, take him out. Sting goes off the top rope and he swings and cracks him over the face with the guitar. Hell of a shot. Then Christian, his natural form, is a smarmy heel. I mean, if you thought this version of Christian in AEW as a heel was great, he managed to do it years earlier in TNA. Mine is talking about people's dead dads, where he forms the Christian Coalition with his old pal, the problem solver Tyson Tonko. He gets AJ Styles into the mix. I believe briefly Scott Steiner might have been one of his lackeys as well. So that was the kind of group he had. He was one of the last people to hold the NWA title as part of that association with the NWA. He led Team Cage against Team Angle at 2007's lockdown. He didn't actually get a clean loss as a heel until 2007's Bound for Glory, but he never did it in a WWE guy comes in and constantly wins all the time. They found unique ways around him not getting pinned cleanly, and they had Samoa Joe beat him, choke him out right in the middle of the ring, and it meant something when Joe beat him. And then he turns face through 2008, feuds with Tonko in another lethal lockdown match, and then by the end of the year, he's written out of TNA because he was forced to join the main event match, but then they immediately were like, oh, we heard you actually want to leave TNA. So they battered him and sent him packing. But then he comes back years later, defeating Kenny Omega in the midst of their feud in AEW for the Impact title, and technically the TNA title as well. So you can see Christian Cage is the only man to hold the NWA title, the TNA world title, and the Impact world title as part of TNA's lineage. He officially retires the TNA title, but since the TNA title's coming back, you can say it's the Terry Funk or the David Campbell of wrestling championships. Has a brief but really memorable run, I think, in the Impact in 2021, you know, fighting with Brian Myers, Ace Austin, and then finally Josh Alexander, putting him over at Bound for Glory while balancing between his stuff in AEW. So yeah, I think when you talk about it's a big thing in wrestling now where a guy gets released or leaves WWE and people are like, oh, when he went to this company, they saw what a main event he could be, or he did this thing on the indies, he showed what he could be. And I think Christian really set the template for that. So who wants to try and prove me wrong that Christian's not the best that TNA's ever had?
I mean, for 3 years, that was probably a phenomenal run for Christian. Like you're saying, he wasn't the guy that was released or fired. He didn't sign a contract. He didn't want to be in WWE at that point any longer, and he chose to cross the line, which was probably one of the huge deal for TNA. The fact that he was the guy they negotiated to bring over when WWE were trying to get Ric Flair for the Hall of Fame, that speaks volumes to his legacy in TNA. I'm sure there's probably guys they did try to maybe get, but the fact that it was Christian that they got, was able to vote, was it announced number one moment in TNA history? I think it was Sting's return or something like that. Still speaks to his legacy of in that company. And yeah, that was an incredible moment to see the Team Canada rejection. That was amazing. I remember watching it on the Wrestling Channel at the time. And it's probably a dark horse pick, I would say, for Christian Cage, because when you put it out there, he's been there for 3 years, you think, oh well, it's 3 years, probably didn't do an awful lot. But then when you break it down, like you've done, and like I've done a little bit of research here, yeah, Christian had an amazing run in TNA, and he's definitely worthy of being named in this conversation.
Yep, I agree. I think that when you look at, you know, big name signings that jumped from WWE to TNA, the headline one is always Kurt Angle, but it could be argued that this one was even more vital to them. Like, as you said, like those early runs going after the TNA title, like and yeah, do you know, like from day one when he got to TNA, he just like looked like more of a player than he did in WWE. In WWE, you know, he was still kind of hanging on to the tail end of his character as Edge and Christian. And then when he got to TNA, he had Christian Cage, like his ring outfit and jacket and stuff. It just felt like such a bigger deal than it was before. And then after he won the title, I remember two specific feuds. You mentioned the one with Abyss, but just before that, I remember him, he fought, I think it was Monty Brown. And I remember him beating Monty Brown, who was this like kind of monster in TNA. I remember that sort of solidified him as not just like this guy that comes in from another company and wins the belt. He felt like such a main event guy. And then that moment with the guitar to Sting, like I vividly, like if I was to pick out the top 10 things I remember about TNA, that would be in there as that guitar shot. Just because I was just like, no, it's my guy. What's he done? Yeah, loved him in TNA. He was so, so, so good. If I can give a shout out to the second best wrestling podcast in the world, OSW Review, they said on numerous episodes that the only reason that they watched TNA is because Christian jumped over and they loved him so much. And, they wanted to see him finally become a star. So I think so many people wrote this moment as why they watched TNA.
Yeah, I hate to keep harking on. Oh, sorry, Scott.
I was going to say, we're coming to the end of our... We're not far from the end of this section, so I was going to say, David, if you can give any comment you want, Christian, and you can segue that into trying to convince us why your pick is better.
Well, I think Christian's entrance music must be talked about, because it's still used today in AEW, and it's on my gym playlist, and it's a banger. And I will say about Christian, there's people have touched on it, but there's like a dichotomy there. TNA, great get with Christian, helped them, but TNA also helped Christian. He got to prove that he was a main event talent, and his presentation was brilliant. But not as brilliant as the Samoan submission machine, Samoa Joe. I want to talk about how Christian needed TNA, how he improved it. AJ Styles grew in his time in TNA. The biggest compliment that you can give Samoa Joe is that he's always been the finished package. When you think about TNA, you think about the X division. And there are folk who believe that's about flippy shit, right? And flippy characters. But the X Division, I think, was built on the shoulders of Samoa Joe. Because if you did not have Samoa Joe in that division, as a contrast, as a foil to all of these guys around him, for one, the matches wouldn't have been as good because they would have just been purely stunt shows. And two, you wouldn't have had that final boss villain of the X division to establish it as a main event division within TNA. We have talked about that triple threat when it came to Styles and Christopher Daniels, the Fallen Angel. But that match is built on Samoa Joe. He is the foil. He is the contrast. He is the constant. And this continues throughout his run in TNA. He elevated the X division. He is a former world champion. His feud with Kurt Angle in 2006 is still talked about to this very day because that's how good it was. And that's Samoa Joe, who's only a year into his run with TNA, which until that point was the biggest company he'd been in, against one of the most popular wrestlers of that era, and he never looked out of place. To this day, Samoa Joe never looks out of place. And like, I'll contrast it to AJ Styles, Samoa Joe was also in the company for nearly 10 years, but I would say there's not as much many negatives that you can put on Joe in this time. I loved when he was fighting the Main Event Mafia, and then I equally loved when he was with the Main Event Mafia also. He is a guy who you could put in Monster Ball matches, you could put him in lockdowns, or you could put him in a Main Event and Impact, and he would perform all the same. When you talk about constant, when you talk about reliability when it comes to TNA, there is a reason that there are signs in the audience saying Cena fears Joe, because people knew that was the main event level that Samoa Joe could be at, but he chose to cut his teeth in total non-stop action. Samoa Joe is the pick for me.
Well, that's a hell of a pick, and it's amazing, like, three out of the four picks we mentioned you're still going today. Christian, TNT champion, Joe, AEW champion. AJ's about to be part of a bloody four-way at the Royal Rumble for the title. Also, I go back to Christian's music, by the way, a blatant rip-off of Evanescence's My Last Breath when you listen to both songs together. It's a very Jimmy Hart-esque, what Jimmy Hart used to do back in the WCW days. Just change enough of it so you don't get sued. But yeah, like you said, Samoa Joe, hell of a constant. Why he never got to take the NWA title off of Jarrett back in the day, like, they had him beat him in like a non-title match right before Bound for Glory, before they segued them both off till Sting could beat Bloody Jeff Jarrett for the title. And they waited all the way to 2008, I think. In some circuits, you could argue maybe they waited too long to put the belt on Joe, which is maybe something that might hinder him in terms of voting here, because by the time he got it, so much was happening. When he lost it, he had to lose it to Sting, even though maybe you should argue Sting should have been putting Joe over, because Sting had to get the belt so that me and Mafia could monopolize the title, so you need to make them more of a threat. But again, it came at the cost of Joe's one and only, it would turn out, TNA title, and why they never put the belt back on him is just bizarre. And you're talking about, again, that triple threat, it keeps coming out, that five-star match. Here's the thing about five-star matches for Joe, and I might actually be helping David's cause in a sense, but in the year 2000, Dave Meltzer only gave out 7 five-star matches. Joe got 3 of them. You got that one. One will be second match with Punk, and then a match with Kenta Kobashi in 2005 in Ring of Honor. So Joe got 3 out of the 7 five-stars, which shows you what kind of a run he was on. Again, another guy at one point, guys, you could say, well, looked like he'd stayed a bit too long, but then eventually got the run that he's on, and hindsight has been kinder to Joe. So, Chris, Billy, give your thoughts on David's pick, and then try and argue why your pick is better than his. But we've got a couple minutes before we start the voting.
I appreciate that David didn't mention Joe getting attacked by ninjas and coming back with the face tattoo. I'll throw that as a negative in there just to try and sway the voting away from David's pick. But yeah, he's a guy, 10 years, absolute constant in TNA. He always had the things to say on the mic, whether it ruffled a few feathers or not as well. So he was a complete package in TNA. Don't want to take up too much time, because I know that we're running out of it. I want to give Chris a chance as well. But yeah, another strong pick. These are just fantastic picks. Everyone will agree, and there'll be a million other names that people will go, oh, what about this guy? But I think we've pretty much hit the nail on the head when it comes to Mount Rushmore here of TNA. But yeah, I'll let Chris say some words.
Very stressed about the upcoming vote, because I'm... don't currently have any arguments, but yes, undefeated streak. And just, again, like the duality with AJ Styles, like every time you need a guy to defend the honor of TNA, he is the man. He was sort of co-leader of the TNA frontline against the Main Event Mafia. He, you know, led the charge against Aces and Eights and parts, Team Dixie stuff. Yeah, the face tattoo, probably a low point. The Beatdown Clan, probably a low point, but you know, there's good stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Billy, you had the greatest argument you could have used against David. Like, yeah, Samojo was undefeated for so long, but your pick beat his pick, and you didn't use it. A poor move on your part. You not gave.
I was too concentrated on the penis tattoo. It was too. It was flooded my brain.
Followed you around the room like the one Lisa's eyes. But, but yeah, these are some solid picks. I mean, some honorable mention also, you guys, we could have, obviously, we couldn't fit anybody. I mean, Samoa Joe, who David's pick, should mention, was on the receiving end of maybe the TNA's greatest promo, the Scott Steiner math promo. And everything. Just to constantly join the eye of Scott Steiner. You've got some honorable mentions, like people like Monty Brown, like Scott Steiner, who had some great stuff in TNA. You have your Stingers, you know. Also, you can't forget about Black Rain, you know. I was tempted to mention Booker T just for that one moment of him commentating his own beatdown, like, Booker T's in the room. Booker T's beating up everybody. But, guys, we're going to go around and we're going to pick someone else. You got to vote for someone else, but you can't vote for yourself. Who are you voting for the best male pick? And we'll see what happens here. I don't know what's going to happen in the event of a tie. I hadn't thought this far ahead. But as a host, maybe I'll make the decision for you. But we'll start with David Campbell. David, you made some solid arguments with Mojo, but you can't pick him. Who else would you vote for?
I think it's fine margins here. There's negatives against Styles in there with the run. I think there's negatives in terms of the length of Christian's run. And on the strength of his in-ring work and what he brought to the company, my vote has to go to Kurt Angle.
All right, Kurt Angle. There's sort of a point in your camp there, Billy, but you need a vote for someone else. Who are you going for?
It was a very easy pick after the words were said. I am ruined this morning. It's way too early. It's AJ Styles. It's definitely AJ Styles is my pick.
Well, there you go. Chris Money, who are you going for?
I've actually gone so far as to write them down on a piece of paper, thinking that if I just stared at the names, that the answer would jump out at me. It hasn't, though. I remember going to sleep last night and I'd picked a wrestler. I was like, oh, well, it's got to be him. And then I woke up this morning and I was like, but is it him? So, right. I think that in terms of character progression, I'm going to go with who I went with when I went to sleep last night. In terms of character progression, now, when Joe came in, I remember him being like an established star in Ring of Honor. So I felt like he was sort of crossing over with that stardom into TNA. And I think the same about Kurt Angle. I think that, like, they had this main event ready package that they just slid on in into the main event scene. But the other man, I think, actually made that character and made that build himself. So I'm going to go with Christian. He was a mid guy in WWE, and then he came to TNA and he made himself a star. Whereas the other two, I feel like, were already ready to be the stars of TNA, whereas Christian built it himself. So I'm going to go Christian.
Now you've put me in an awkward position here, Chris. Because if I had one vote for Angle, one vote for AJ Styles, one vote for Christian, and for the longest time, I was leaning towards Samoa Joe. But if I say Samoa Joe, that leads us into a tie with everybody. And now that means I can't go for Samoa Joe because there will be a tie situation and then we'll be fucked.
Scott, well, I'm happy. If you vote for Joe, we can put it to a Twitter or Instagram vote. We can announce it on Central because, quite frankly, Ross McLeod owes us as much that at least. So,
okay, thank you. I'm going for Samoa Joe.
Yes,
we're all winners.
Four-way tie. Yeah. Give them everyone all the belt. That's such a TNA thing to happen.
I'll go for Samoa Joe, even though he's got some fat asses.
Reverse battle royal between the four of us to see who wins.
The title of ultimate best TNA wrestler is tied up on the top of an Ultimate X. First one to climb up gets it.
Elevation X.
Remember they would put Joe in those Ultimate X matches, but he couldn't actually like do the match, so he just had to like, you know, cut about in the ring for a bit. That was such a shame.
That was one of the clever ways they had him lose a match without getting pinned. He didn't get pinned in the Unbreakable match, and then was in an Ultimate X match, but obviously lost it, but didn't get pinned, so they kept him protected for the most part. But yeah, there's also some great people still going today in TNA, like the Motor City Machine Guns and people like that. Josh Alexander, who would have been Ross's pick, Moose, Eric Young, still going. So I could be here all day talking about the list of TNA greats that we didn't get a chance to mention. we're going into the women's pick now. Ross went with Deonna Purrazzo. If he'd been here, a solid pick. She was holding up the TNA Knockout division for a good 3 years, maybe in AEW. Since Ross isn't here, I was tempted to take Deonna as my own pick, but I'm happy with the pick I've got. But we're not starting with him. We're going in the reverse order, which means we go to David Campbell's pick, a pick who he initially was annoyed didn't get picked. So I'm interested to hear his arguments on this one. Starting the timer for this one, David, your female pick.
How appropriate you come to David Campbell to talk about some beautiful people, because my pick is the six-time champion of the Knockouts division. It's Angelina Love. Now, Scott, you're going to hear a lot of other picks here. The viewers, the listeners, they're going to hear a lot of other picks here. You're going to have your five-star matches. You're going to have your in-ring classics. And I'll tell you this, Angelina Love was not sleeping on that. But the key argument I have for Angelina Love and the key strength of Angelina Love was in her character work. The Knockouts division in Total Nonstop Action had the pure babyface in Gail Kim. The Knockouts division had the monster in Awesome Kong. But it doesn't work without the bitch. It doesn't work without this horrible, horrible, disgusting heel that is Angelina Love. Her promos were fantastic. There is a reason when they did their anniversary shows recently that they had the beautiful people come out with one of the most iconic entrances in all of professional wrestling. She was just outstanding. She competed in every match. She competed in lockdowns. She had feuds with, like I said, Awesome Kong, Gail Kim, even Taylor Wilde. She managed to get some decent matches out of her. But with her, it's the in-ring segments that I remember. It's Cute Kip, Billy Gunn, who recently did her Christmas special on, accompanying her and Velvet Sky to the ring when they brought Madison Rain into the fold as well. I believe, did she win the title in Feast or Fired? Which is a great, is a shit moment, but also a great moment in itself because it encapsulates everything about TNA. My key argument here with Angelina Love isn't to try and say that she was better in ring than the other people we're going to bring up. It's to say that without Angelina Love, the Knockouts division doesn't work. TNA had great in-ring work. It was fantastic as a wrestling company, but it would not have been as good of a television product without Angelina Love there as the key foil in the women's division.
Well, solid argument there, David. I remember that moment. It's the funniest part about it is Tara, formerly Victoria, is right before her in the opening of the boxes, and she's got her, she's the champion, but she's also got her pet spider in one of the boxes. So she opens her box, her pet spider, she's happy, she's, and then she's informed that that means she's lost the title. And the look on her face to change, like, you fucking what? And, you know, this is David Campbell's pick. No, is it any surprise that David Campbell loves a bitch? But Chris, Billy, either you've got an argument against or for David's pick here.
I would like to chuck in the fact that one of the best things about Angelina Love was just you actually saw her progress as a wrestler as her TNA career went on, because she was, you know, she first came in, she was a bag of shite, let's face it. But as she went on, she became such a better wrestler and she became a cornerstone of the division. I am going to say something here. I don't know if this is controversial or not, but I'm pretty sure of it. Right, move over, Jumping Bomb Angels. But the Beautiful People are the best female tag team of all time. Like,
Breach,
of all time.
Reach.
Like, I think that's undisputed. I remember when I went to see TNA in 2011 and they came out and made their entrance, I was just like, fucking hell, they've got such a good gimmick. They, you know, they look amazing. Like, they didn't even really need Cute Kip, but he kind of augmented them as well. If they were, I mean, I think they're kind of still getting a game here and there, but if they were at the peak of their powers now in WWE, they would literally have been WWE Tag Team Champions for about 4 years, because nothing would have came close to them. Angelina specifically, I think, is such a good shout. She, you know, had those interesting and that interesting run with, was it Winter? Is that her name?
Yeah.
When she was hypnotized. That was maybe a low point, but I do genuinely think that she came on so much as a wrestler as her career went on.
And they had a brief thing where, for a few segments, when she was first introduced, like, Angelina could see her, but no one else apparently could see her. So You're like, what if we took that Warrior Hogan mirror angle and stretched it out over a couple of weeks?
I'm not going to jump in too much because it really ruins my pick.
Fair enough. That's fair. But I don't know what's the bigger shock there, Chris. You know, the fact that you called them the greatest women's tag team of all time, or the fact that somebody in 2024 mentioned the Jumping Bomb Angels. I don't know which is more of a shock.
That's why
I think of a credible women's tag team to mention the Jumping Bomb Angels are the first thing I thought.
Mention the Golden Role Models, you know, or...
Get out of here.
I'm like surprised that Chris brought them up. Like, you know, he's the expert when it comes to that period in WWF here in the podcast.
Sure. I think a good thing about their gimmick, why it was so strong, is I think you wouldn't be out of place their gimmick in WWE's Divas era, which was very rife at over on WWE while the Knockouts division was hitting its stride. I think they were playing off a lot of people's, what a lot of people hated about women's wrestling and the portrayal of women's wrestling. So I think that helped. You know, it drew the blurred line between genuine heat and, you know, the heat they wanted you to have. But we'll go into my pick, a very drastically different pick from David's. I was between two people because they had a feud that really helped revolutionize, you know, Knockouts division, really helped put it on the map. And the one I chose was Awesome Kong, because she's one of the people you can't not talk about when coming talk about the Knockouts division. She came in, you know, as this monster from Japan. She spent time over wrestling in Japan. You know, they could have brought her in like a female Vader, this woman who worked stiff, but came and battered everybody. They had that music with the like she was this Godzilla-like kaiju coming in from the Far East to destroy everyone. And, you know, there was nothing really like Kong at that time, you know, before you had your Rhea Ripley's and your Nia Jax's, your Raquel, look at my back, Gonzalez or Rick Rodriguez, whatever she's called now. Like, you had people like Awesome Kong, you know, they didn't immediately put the belt on her like in season one of Glow. They waited, they built to it, and then when she finally got the belt off of Gail Kim during their great feud, it was all about who can get the belt off of this dominant heel champion, like season two of Glow, when they were chasing Welfare Queen and that prestigious Glow crown. But with the reason, like, she didn't talk, even though we've seen in shows like Glow and in she interviews, she's very charming, she's very charismatic, but she chose, let's not have her talk. Just look at her facial expressions and just let her actions around do the talking, because I think that made her a lot more intimidating. And again, it was the chase. You know, she helped put over Taylor Wilde, where Taylor Wilde kept coming out of the crowd week after week saying, no, I'll fight Kong the same. She gets a little bit closer, but it doesn't do it, and then finally gets the belt off her. And it was a big moment when Taylor Wilde finally got the belt off Kong. I believe she's at least like a two-time Knockouts champion. You know, she had the Kong tourage with some very questionable characters in there. She had a brief run back in 2015 when she returned, and she even came back for the 1,000th episode special. She had one of the best-named finishing moves of all time with the Implant Buster. It wasn't just a clever name of the fact that a lot of women wrestlers had implants. It was, I think it was based on the fact that Gail Kim accidentally ruptured an implant during a match with Kong, being hit with the move, so they ran with it and gave it that name. And I said, she's very revolutionary, I think, as Kong, in terms of women's wrestler. There were very few like her at that time. I think when you watch back her stuff in TNA, it makes it all the more upsetting that she didn't have an elongated run in either WWE or AEW. She was in both companies for like a blink and you'll miss it. And it just feels like such a shame that they didn't really capitalize on her in those companies the same way that TNA did. And you know, while the Gail Kim were great, like chase this plucky underdog, he had the big monster. It was also more interesting when she had feuds with like ODB or Tara, or in her second run, when she had that feud with the recently debuted Havoc. When you get the monster, like, one thing when they're fighting the underdog, who's a bit smaller than them, has to try and play smarter. When they're fighting someone who can actually give them a challenge, who's a bit similarly as imposing as the monster themselves, it's a lot of opportunity, like, okay, they can't do what they usually do to other opponents. How do they get rid of this? And it allows for more clever booking, and they really did that with Awesome Kong. And again, guys, what else can be said about Awesome Kong back in the late 2000s Knockouts division? You all agree with me. Thank you.
I think that's a good, really good pick. The thing with Awesome Kong is I feel like wherever she went, and you kind of touched on this, Scott, she just never fulfilled her full potential. She came in at during my prime TNA watching days in about 2007. And she, like, I don't, like, she's one of the best definitions of monster heel you could ever find. She had amazing work with the champion at the time, Gail Kim. And I remember we got to the stage a bit like where we got with Brock Lesnar and like the late 10s, where I was just like, who's going to beat this woman? Like, it's impossible. And, you know, sadly, the run in TNA was probably a bit shorter than I'd liked. She ended up going to WWE, and then that never really went anywhere either. So, yeah, I constantly felt like she had this, like, kind of missed potential, but such a phenomenal wrestler that, you know, should have had more to her.
She was like the Samoa Joe from the women's division, really. She came in with this different to everything else you'd seen if you were a WWE fan, certainly, and then coming in as the final boss, so to speak, when she wins the title. And like you're saying, she had all these kind of challengers. She had Christy Hemme, she had your Sojo Bolts, your Taylor Wilde, your Gail Kims, all trying to vie for this title, but she was just batting them away with relative ease most of the time. So she's definitely a point in time for TNA where they were so different from WWE, and because they had this massive monster in the women's division, which is not something that you'd got from that and made them the alternative. Yeah, fantastic pick. Can't really argue much more about it.
Yeah, I think Billy said a moment in time, probably than the knock, but what a moment it was. Unique is the word when it comes to Kong. I don't think that anyone has been able to replicate what she did since then. It's about presence and it's about intensity. And I'm glad, so glad that you mentioned Glow, because we've seen the woman behind the character, Scott, as a terrific actress. And it's evident, it's hard to play a monster as effectively as she did back in that time. Wrestling is all about a clash of styles. It's all about a clash of characters. And she clashed with everyone because she was one of a kind. Again, I talk about this from a storytelling perspective. If you're a booker, you're salivating at that point, thinking this is a great character to have in my story that I'm putting forward here. Awesome Kong, one of my personal favourites. Great pick, Scott.
Sorry, talking and my microphone was muted. Silly me. A very professional host over here at ESSR. Do you want to hear more about Glow and the charismatic character that was the Welfare Queen, how she, before Cody Rhodes, finished her story by winning and then dropping the crown to the Liberty Bell? You can check out the backlog. We have episodes on all three seasons of Glow, featuring also David Campbell. Good times were had by all. It was cut too short. It should have been a season 4. I believe now in the order of rotation, we go to Mr. Chris Money.
Yes. Okay. So, when we're picking wrestlers for our best of TNA show, I had to go with Gail Kim because, you know, she had a fairly disappointing run in WWE before she got to TNA. And then she came over to TNA and immediately was inserted into what was TNA's best tag team at the time, America's Most Wanted. She was their manager. She was just a brilliant heel manager for them for so, so long. They had a great run as like a trio for a good while. But once we got to 2007 and TNA decided they wanted to actually have a women's division, Gail Kim propped the whole thing up. She was the inaugural Knockouts champion. She had those amazing matches with Awesome Kong, which we talked about in the last bit. What I thought was great about Gail Kim was when it looked like it was impossible to beat Awesome Kong, Gail Kim made it possible. By, again, similar to Abyss versus AJ Styles that I talked about earlier on in the show, it was this big, powerful female wrestler versus this, like, plucky, technical, smaller female wrestler, and it just worked so, so well. I feel like she was just such a cornerstone of the whole company for such a long time. She managed to do what is, you know, more common now, but wasn't common at the time, but she actually managed to flip her success in TNA into a new run with WWE, which again, I don't really remember very much of, before coming back to TNA in 2011. It would have been Impact by 2011, yeah. But we still get...
I think it was a bit of that transition, but I think it was still kind of the TNA name when she came back.
Yeah, so by this point, she came back as a great plucky heel You know, teaming up with the likes of Karen Jarrett, Madison Rain, stuff like that. But what I thought was good about the second run is we got more opportunities to see her face some of the people that had became, you know, so vital to TNA in her absence. You know, like she had great runs with Mickey James, ODB. She was even fighting the Doll's House for a bit. And then, of course, we got the retirement tour, which was in about 2016, 2017. Around that time, she became the first ever female Hall of Famer for TNA. And she even went out on a high, unlike every other wrestler in the world. She went out as Impact's champion, Impact Knockouts champion, I should say. And yeah, I just think that despite her run being a bit kind of broken up and there being dips in it in parts, I think that Gail Kim, just again, much like what we said about Christian last time around, someone that came in on a level to TNA and then took themselves up so significantly when they got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember I was watching weekly when she came back, and I think it was 2011. She formed this team with Madison Rayne, with Karen Jarrett, kind of their pseudo manager. When she was holding one half of the Knockouts tail and the Knockouts tail itself at the same time, one of the only heels to do so. And then when she was going to have a match with Madison Rayne at the upcoming pay-per-view, their squabbling led them to lose the tag team titles, which helped fuel the match going there. I think she did get a lot of criticism when she, I think it was in 2017 at Beverly, where, and what she said would be her last match, she ends up winning the title rather than putting over the then champion. I think she got some criticism from the time, like both from wrestlers and from some fans at the time. But, you know, I think she has since come back, since she was part of that big multi-woman match at the 1000th episode. So, you know, we know what they say about wrestling retirements. But yeah, I could have went either way. Went to him, say, between Gail Kim and Awesome Kong when I was making my pick, because for me, they were two sides of the same coin, because being so closely associated with Jill and Tom at their time. And so much so that when Awesome Kong went in, it was Gail Kim that bloody inducted her. So I think, yeah. I mean, look at her time in early 2000s WWE before she comes over to TNA, the stark contrast in how she's treating WWE to TNA. I mean, it just tells you everything. Look up the story of how JR convinced Vince McMahon to even give Gail Kim a chance in WWE and why she'd be appealing. It just screams WWE's attitudes to women at the time. But yeah, again, much like AJ Styles in the men's division and what I mentioned about Austin Cole, you can't talk about the Knockouts guys without mentioning Gail Kim, though, the first ever Knockouts champion.
I think whenever we discuss women's wrestling of a time in this podcast and WWE, it's always sad because we caveat it with they did the best with what they were given, or they did the best with the opportunities they were given. I think the most important thing that Gail Kim did for women's wrestling was show that when women were given these opportunities, they would rise to the occasion and then some. There is a reason that she is hailed as a beacon of women's wrestling, as a trailblazer of women's wrestling, because it isn't hyperbolic to say that. She and Awesome Kong were what women's wrestling was for a lot of people for a generation. They inspired a generation. When you talk about the women coming up today, they will name Gail Kim as one of their inspirations. And I think Chris touched on it and touched on it beautifully. The key to Gail Kim is her longevity, is the amount of women that she managed to get in the ring with and time again prove herself as one of the finest in-ring talents I've ever had, and also one of the finest babyface talents I've ever had many times. I think it's harder for wrestlers to play a really good babyface than it is a really good heel. But Gail Kim was beloved for the majority of her run during TNA. There aren't enough good things I can say about Gail Kim. She deserves Hall of Fame status. She deserves to be revered as well. A great pick. Yeah, Gail Kim's brilliant.
Yeah, so, I can't really add much more on the Gail Kim talk here, because she's the pioneer. She's probably the reason why people are clamoring for a women's division in TNA for so long. I mean, at the time, who'd you have? Trinity, Tracy Brooks, Jackie Moore, and that big woman that they had for Styles and Daniels against America's Most Wanted and Gail Kim. So without her, I could conceivably say there wouldn't have been a demand, and there probably wouldn't be as a developed women's division in TNA without Gail Kim. So yeah, can't argue with it.
Yeah, the fact that she kind of stuck around for a couple of years, she went there a year or so before they even had a Knockout division, so she bided her time knowing that they would eventually have the division. She you know, was the ideal choice to be the first champion, to help lead the division. You know, spend some time as a manager, like you said, to America's Most Wanted, Chris. You mentioned your Chris Harris tribute show. You're going to be waiting a long, long fucking time before you get that Christmas special. She's also a manager for Jeff Jarrett as part of his briefly foreign planet Jarrett stable as well. So she bided her time and knew she would get the opportunities she deserved. So, Billy, we'll parlay this into who you picked, and then we'll go into the voting process and hopefully have a more decisive winner this time.
Oh, I've got a very difficult task ahead of me, I think. So we talk about beautiful, and I'm just going to copy David's intro there. So I've chosen Velvet Sky. There could be people there going, why not Mickie James? Well, I didn't pick them, so, you know, someone else's problem. But Velvet Sky, right. Okay, I could do this. We could do this. So, made a debut in the Women's Division Battle Royal that crowned the new champion, some intros beforehand. And much like the story of Beautiful People, it was just the character work. There were some of the highest rated segments in TNA, Velvet Sky and Angelina Love together, then Madison Rayne and Lacey Von Erich. Can't forget her in the story of the Beautiful People, Cute Kip. And of course, to be honest, I just fueled this along with just one catchphrase by the superhuman suplex machine himself, is just let the pigeons loose. And I wanted Velvet Sky in the conversation. She a two-time knockouts champion. She won the tag titles as well. She's got the triple crown in TNA because she won the pink slip in the Feast of Fire match as well. It's a hard sell. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've heard three really great arguments for picks, and my pick just really pales in comparison. But I wanted Velvet Sky in the conversation at the very least, because without her and Angelina Love together as Beautiful People, probably wouldn't have as many highly rated, maybe not rated, highly watched segments in TNA history without them. So yeah, I should keep it short and sweet, because I'm probably not going to pick Velvet Sky because I can't anyway because of the rules of this episode. But yeah, sorry guys for letting the side team down at the end here.
Well, it felt like Velvet Sky at that time. It felt like Velvet Sky looked at Melina like, and he was like, oh look, I've got the greatest women's entrance in wrestling today, and Velvet Sky like, hold my beer.
Yeah, it was to be honest, if David wasn't on and picked Angelina Love, I probably would have had a better argument, but he absolutely ruined me by having an amazing chat about Beautiful People, and really drove home to me that, yeah, Angelina Love was kind of the spearhead behind that, and Velvet Sky was the arse in the situation, and she let those pigeons loose.
I feel that I should apologise to Billy, but first and foremost. But also, like Chris has pointed out, the Beautiful People were a package, they were a tandem. Velvet Sky, a few less titles, but she was a big part of that. And she also had the longevity within TNA. She had her own sort of stories separate to the Beautiful People for a time as well. But I will say to the panel, two people have picked the Beautiful People here. So if your vote is going in that direction, it might as well go to Angelina Love.
I know. I would have thought the biggest split would have been between Awesome Kong and Gia Given. No, it seems to be a battle with the Beautiful People here at the minute. But yeah, that's what made them as a group such a great dynamic. You know, you had Angelina was the brains, Velvet was the arse, and Lacey Von Erich was the drizzling shits. Has anyone else got any last minute arguments for their pick, or should we go straight into the voting process?
I think we're ready to go.
It's an unanimous vote for the voting.
Yeah, that's my argument.
Alright, we'll go, we'll start with Billy. Who other than your own pick would you select for the best knockout or slash female wrestler of TNA's history?
Another very easy pick. It's definitely Gail Kim. It's the pioneer of wrestling in TNA. Yeah, has to be Gail Kim.
Don't try to look so smug there, Chris Murray. Who are you picking?
Do you know what? I again have wrote them all down on pieces of paper and stared at them in the hope that the answer would come out. I think it's really, really close, but I think I'm just leaning towards Angelina Love. I think Velvet Sky, I mean, don't get me wrong, she had her run without Angelina Love, but I think that Velvet Sky's got a lot to thank Angelina Love for. Awesome Kong's run was a lot shorter. I just noticed here that, like as I said, I think that one of Angelina Love's best attributes is that she became a better wrestler. I just noticed that she got voted number two female wrestler of the year by the PWI for 2 years in a row. And I just think that, like, at that time, that's quite a big deal to be that high in that list. And yeah, I think that all her attributes sort of rate her quite highly. So I'm going to go Angelina.
Okay, one for you, Ken, one for Angelina. David, will you go for the other half of the beautiful people, or will you look to either side of one of the greatest knockout streets of all time? Who's your vote going to?
I'm just happy I've secured second place for Angelina Love, because this is what dreams are made of. Listen, I Awesome Kong probably is my favourite of the bunch, but the negatives about the brevity of her run I don't think can be overlooked. And I think this leads out a beautiful argument as to why Gail Kim isn't just great in ring, wasn't just great as a television character on the show. She was a pioneer, as Billy said. She was so important to women's wrestling. The vote has to go to Gail Kim.
Well, it doesn't really matter what I say, because I can't really vote for my own pick. I was hoping to at least get one, but, you know, no disrespect to the beautiful people, neither the faction nor the Marilyn Manson song. But yeah, if I have to give one pick, it's going to go for Gail Kim, the ones we have here. So unlike the last one, it seems to be very unanimous. And amazingly, the scores are tie for third with zero is Velvet Sky and Awesome Kong. The only time you hear those two in the same sentence. What, second place, Angelina Love with one.
Yes, and, come on!
And with three right at the top is Gail Kim, right at the top of the podium. Gail Kim is undisputedly, as voted by ESSR here. So that's it. It's decided. You can never talk about it again. Gail Kim is the greatest knockout in TNA wrestling history. Congratulations, Chris. Take your victory lap, sir.
Yes, very, very happy with that. But let it never be forgotten, the discussion we had about Angelina Love here today. And I think what is the most important thing that we have to remember in all of this, now tied with Kazuchika Okada as the best wrestler to never having wrestled in WWE.
Yeah. Again. Oh, I could go on for days about that, Chris, how that's the biggest wasted opportunity in WWE history, is not bringing in Angelina Love or the beautiful people to give Billy his flowers here. But, you know, I'm happy. If anything has come out of me coming on the show today, is getting to preach the gospel of Angelina Love. So thank you very much.
Well, we're going to turn to the social media now to get some of the listener feedback and from our other contributors here on the ASSR panel. We posted on Facebook asking you for your favourite TNA male and female superstar. David Hockney was straight in there with AJ Styles as Mr. TNA for a reason, a once-in-a-generation talent who rose up the ranks from day one and still delivered five-star quality matches. Arguably the main reason I started watching TNA in the first place. Didn't give a female pick. Sexist. David Campbell, you were very active here before we realised we needed you on the show. You mentioned people like Awesome. You mentioned Awesome Kong here, yet you didn't choose to vote for your face.
Chris made a very compelling argument, Scott. I don't know what to say.
You also mentioned the Monster Abyss, someone we could have mentioned. You also shouted out Mike Tenay and Don West, recent Hall of Fame inductees, RIP Don West. I still wish they'd bring that Mike Tenay just for a one shot. And you did also mention Angelina Love, so it should not be a surprise that you mentioned her as part of your pick. Jack Graham said Gail Kim is his best female. He said Jeff Jarrett. Boo. To Jack Graham. Sam Wilson said gotta be Samoa Joe. His unbeaten run from his debut was some of the best stuff. All mentions to Abyss, Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Gail Kim, and James Storm. Alan Lucas seemed to give us a fucking dissertation with his suggestion here. But he said, this is the hill I'm prepared to die on. AJ Styles is the best professional wrestler of all time. AJ Styles is the GOAT of TNA. Other incredible wrestlers include James Storm, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Mr. Anderson, Sting, Jeff Jarrett, and Kurt Angle. From the women's division, it has to be Gail Kim has to be the... Right, I'll start that again. For the women's division, Gail Kim has to be as other mentions, Mickie James, Velvet Sky, also called Madison Rayne, Tara. You're going to include the Impact era. You've got to include Jordan Grace and Deonna Purrazzo. Jordan Grace was also just missed out on being one of my picks. And then Aaron Laurie said, no further questions. Oh, Shell, yeah, with a picture of Shark Boy.
I won't change my pick.
Too late.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, again, so many people that could invest, especially in the knockouts division as well. It's still consistently today, I think, is one of the best women's divisions. I mean, I've been saying it for the last couple of years. Tony Khan needs to flick on Access TV, watch TNA, and see how to pick a fucking women's division properly. That's all I'm saying. But it's some great suggestions here from the contributors and from the listeners. and great comments here on the panel. So we're going to put it to a vote. We're going to put it on a poll on Twitter for the best male wrestler that's still WWE. It's going to be between AJ Styles, Kurt Angle, Christian Cage, Samoa Joe. Hell, in some circles, that's a man Rushmore for TNA, but there can only be one winner, much like Highlander. There can only be one. So it's up to you. We'll hopefully announce it on the next episode of Central, or a episode of Central coming up soon. Who knows? We're recording this in advance, like I said. Make sure you keep in touch. Make sure you keep up with all our social media channels at SuperHQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Keep up with the poll when it goes up and make sure your voice is heard, Christian Cage. Or Christian Cage will come to your house and insult a member of your deceased family. But like he'll come to you like Jacob Marley comes to Scrooge. make sure you keep up with that. Make sure you keep up with all our content, all good Android podcast sites, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast from. Give us a like, rating, review on your platform. Please keep up with episodes of Central every week. Episodes of Sad Draft Live every Saturday, East meets West. Keep around with a busy start to the year for New Japan Pro Wrestling. A 2-hour Wrestle Kingdom special should be in the back catalogue, or near 2-hour Wrestle Kingdom special should be in the back catalogue right now for you to enjoy. Listen to the back catalogue of feature shows. We ended last year with a show that's still doing really well amongst anything else we've done so far this last year, which is the Rhea Ripley feature show. Mammy draws numbers. It's the episode's just going up and up. We kicked off the year with the Rey Mysterio feature show with the host return of Quacky Aji. And most recently, we had the Royal Rumble quiz. It went up the day of the Royal Rumble with Daniel Campbell back in the hosting chair. Our annual Rumble quiz with all the same hijinks you come to expect. Obviously, this has been your feature show for the month of February. Hope you've enjoyed it. And hope you're enjoying the new era of TNA as when this comes out. And make sure to tune in to the future shows next month when we talk about the Axe, the Smash, and maybe the Crush of the Demolition, going back to some old-school WWF tag team wrestling. It's all flavours of wrestling to be covered and enjoyed on the Aces Are podcast feed. But until next time, when we're all gathered together and we decide who the best TNA wrestler is, I have been Scott McLeod, your host. Happy to be your host on this journey through nostalgic memories of TNA. I want to thank all of you. Thank you to Billy Strachan.
TNA. Oh, shell, yeah.
To the man who mysteriously didn't vote for Jim Mariska or Charmel for his best female fight, but he still won anyway, Chris Murray.
Yes, King of the Mountain match to decide the actual champion.
And for filling in very late, the our very own Dixie Carter, David Gamble.
Cena fears Joe. Let it never be forgotten. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
If you remember nothing from this show, remember that. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.